This program is brought to you by PersonalLifeMedia.com.
Oh, welcome to Evolutionary Sales. I'm your host, Jason McLean, and your guide in the 21st century marketplace. Thanks for continuing to join me in this series of podcasts and allowing me to contribute to your success and ultimately to your fulfillment and the service you provide to your clients and prospects. There's one single organizing principle that if you just took this one single organizing principle on, it will make the biggest difference in your life and in your business. And that single organizing principle is that you are responsible for all of the results that you're producing in your life. Nobody else. Another way to think about it is learn the rules thoroughly. Understand the purpose of them so that you can then break them with some creativity if you do want to break them. You know, there's two basic concerns, time and money, typically. When you pre-frame it, you take somebody's ability to object to it out of the way. You can brag about it. You know, it costs too much. Well, so if you hear that a lot, or you say people don't have time, you simply add it into your pre-frame. You say, you know, some people think this costs too much. But in my experience, clients report, measured against the value, the price is really insignificant. Last week on the show, what we talked about was how to build vision and possibility and how really clients and prospects, they don't buy services or products, but they buy results or solutions or possibilities. And it will be your ability to continually tie in your product or service to what they want to make possible in their business or in their life as it relates to their specific and specified outcomes that will continually have them be tied to the vision that you can provide through working with them in partnership. This week on the show, what we're going to talk about is some really powerful linguistic skills, reframing, how to isolate concerns. Some people call them objections. I prefer to relate to them as concerns, and how to reframe those in a way that's tremendously powerful. But first, there's a few mindsets I want to go over because we're getting pretty advanced in terms of the process here. And so at this stage, there's going to be some opportunities for you to adjust your course. And let's talk a little bit about that. Earlier on in the series, I not only talked about the importance of self-esteem, but I also wrote an article about it on the blog. And I've got an additional article coming out that drills down a few more of those concepts and fleshes out a bit more of that for you. But ultimately, at this point, you're going to have a lot of opportunity to either take responsibility and adjust or learn or acquire a new skill or blame it on the prospect or client. Well, you know, they were X, Y, and Z. Or, you know, I've always heard that person is a blank. Or, you know, they just couldn't understand what I was offering them. Or, you know, they just weren't ready to buy. Or, you know, maybe they weren't telling me the truth. Maybe they weren't financially qualified and they said they were. Or, you know, well, there was an additional, decision maker that I was unaware of that they surprised me with. All of these things. Now, all of those ways of languaging whatever occurred there are ways of blaming, ways of avoiding responsibility. And if there's one single thing, one single principle, and I say this in a lot of different contexts with my clients, but I'm going to say this to you, there's one single organizing principle that if you just took this one single organizing principle on, it will make the biggest difference in your life and in your business. And that single organizing principle is that you are responsible for all of the results that you're producing in your life. Nobody else. Nobody else did anything. Two interesting ways to think about it is one, every time you point the finger out at someone, there's three more pointed back at you. I love that one. The other one, which is really funny, because there's, you know, it's a double meaning, is that there's no you in responsibility. And what this means to you is that you need to have the orientation, the mindset that there's something you could have done differently. Not like there was something you did wrong. It's not like you failed. It's not like you were unsuccessful. It's that there was something for you to learn or gain, or some piece that you missed. I know while I was perfecting this system, and it will always be an evolution because there's always something to add, but I also think that once, you know, you get to 100% with financially qualified clients, I can call that a perfected system. It's still opened. It's not a closed system. I intend on evolving the system over the years. I'm already working on version 3. But ultimately, if I had at any point blamed one of my prospects for not signing, rather than taking responsibility, noticing what I missed, maybe I didn't have enough rapport, or maybe I didn't ask enough questions in advance. You know, one of the questions I ask is there anyone else that needs to be involved in this decision? And that's a really elegant way of asking if they're empowered to make the financial choice. And it does in a way that allows them to save face. But these are questions you need to ask. And anytime something happens, you go, what can I add to avoid that in the future? One of the things I do if there's some misunderstanding with a client is I look to my client coach agreement. And I look at it and I examine whether or not whatever happened is covered in the agreement. And I add a clause if it's not. If it is, I go, remember this part of the agreement. Or, gee, I'm sorry, I should have, and this is the really responsible way to do it, I should have communicated more clearly about how important this clause in our agreement is. Let's go over this so that we can avoid this in the future. The bottom line is you're going to get a lot of opportunities every single day to blame people, every single day to avoid taking responsibility for ways in which you can improve or provide a solution for yourself, so that you can provide a better service for your clients. Because remember, I haven't said this for a few episodes, but the difference that will make a difference for you and for your clients and prospects in the 21st century, for your prosperity, and ultimately for your spiritual and emotional fulfillment, is for you to come from a place of service and contribution. Service and contribution. Gone are the days in Western society when you can swindle people out of money or manipulate people out of money, or at the very least, you won't sleep well at night, and at the worst, you'll go to jail. Leave those things. Leave people treating their prospects as objects to developing economies, and they'll learn the limitations of that. They're at their own stage of development, and that's just fine. But for you, you need to constantly be coming from a grounding as an evolutionary salesperson in providing service, providing contribution, providing solutions, and making things possible in people's lives that weren't possible before without your product or service. So those are a few mindsets for you to take on, try on. And with anything else, try it on for a while. If it doesn't work for you, throw it away. I'm not attached to this being the only way to do things. What I would caution you against is don't throw it away because the movement made you sore. If you recall, I talk about building a muscle a lot. Let's say you go to the gym and you bench press for the first time and you get really sore and you go, that's not for me. Well, maybe it's for you. Why don't you work through the soreness first till you actually get comfortable with the movement? And then you can say, that one's not really developing me in a way that I would like. Then you can do it. Well, another way to think about it is learn the rules thoroughly. Understand the purpose of them so that you can then break them with some creativity if you do want to break them. Okay, so let's get into the thick of the next piece. And this is a long series of reframes. And what I want you to do is I want to make sure that you practice these with a partner. So before I've kind of said, a partner is really great. I highly encourage you to get a partner. It's not necessary. Well, with these, you absolutely have to run through these with a partner. And it could be your neighbor, your brother, it could be your dog. Do it in the mirror if you need to. Partner with yourself. But I recommend partnering with somebody else who will challenge you in ways that you wouldn't be able to challenge yourself because they have a different worldview and different responses or reactions. These are called sleight of mouth. And first, I want to just be really honest and say that for years, I was aware of these distinctions, sleight of mouth distinctions, but the examples I read were so horrible that I was convinced they would break rapport unless I was coming from a place of authority and dominance, which just isn't the way I do things. And so I have developed, and I've borrowed some of these from a gentleman by the name of Christopher Howard, a wonderful NLP trainer, trained by Tad James. He's kind of a great mix of Tony Robbins and Tad James. Chris does some great stuff, and I've gotten many of these from him. I've modified many of them myself, but I want to acknowledge that Chris Howard opened my mind to the fact that these sleight of mouth patterns could be useful, and they could be done with some elegance, with respect for the other person's process. And ultimately, the way I think about these now is that it is my duty, if I'm coming from service and contribution, it is my duty to leverage people beyond their limitations. So with that, you know, there's two basic concerns, time and money, typically. I mean, there's a couple other types of concerns. One is that they don't believe you. In other words, you haven't developed enough credibility. That's a matter of rapport. And if you follow the process I've laid out so far with your information gathering, with permissive selling, units of value and meaning, units of conviction, that really shouldn't be a problem. If it is, then you need to back up and realize that you didn't develop enough rapport at some point, or you didn't ask enough questions. If you've got enough rapport, you can say, wow, I'm curious. And, do you feel comfortable with me as a service provider? Because I want to make sure that you feel comfortable with me. Otherwise, we shouldn't even work together. Kind of authenticity in this day and age. Again, provided you have rapport. If you don't have enough rapport, you're going to make people feel uncomfortable. They're going to contract even more. But provided you have that kind of situation going on, that kind of deep rapport. And if you don't, you could say, I'm going to say something and it might seem kind of weird. But I want to make sure that we have the kind of grounding that I want to provide with my clients and prospects, the kind of relationship I want to provide. In other words, you just pre-frame it first. And if the best way to handle concerns is to speak to them up front and pre-frame them. In other words, say, some people think of it this way, but really the truth is blank. Or gosh, some people might think what I'm about to say is really weird, and that's okay if you do. But ultimately, what I want is this kind of relationship. So, blah, and you deliver the communication. When you pre-frame it, you take somebody's ability to object to it out of the way. You can brag about it. It costs too much. Well, so if you hear that a lot, or you say people don't have time, you simply add it into your pre-frames. You say, some people think this costs too much. But in my experience, clients report measured against the value, the price is really insignificant. If you say that up front, then you take away their ability. At worst, they'll feel silly for objecting. But ultimately, you'll give them a frame to step into, a way of perceiving the world. You give it to them before they think of it. John Grinder, one of my heroes in communication, said an ounce of pre-framing is worth a pound of reframing. So pre-frame whenever you can. Pre-frame whenever you can. Anticipate objections. Start to gather data about typical concerns. And simply begin to build that into your presentation in a way that addresses it up front, but also reduces it or minimizes it. But let's say you haven't built enough rapport. Let's say you forgot to pre-frame, or you're still learning to pre-frame. And let's say that, let's say maybe your client didn't tell you the truth, or the responsible way to say is you didn't provide enough context for them to be fully honest with you. And you'll do that in the future, of course. But the next one, reframing. While an ounce of pre-framing is worth a pound of reframing, the ability to reframe might save your bacon someday. So I'm going to give you 16 specific reframing sleight of mouth patterns. I'm going to use the money of can't afford it, which is a common one for people in the personal development world. So this is what I have the most familiarity with. And I will name the pattern so that you can begin to customize it for your business, contextualize it for your business. So have a seat. Get ready to take some notes. I'm going to pause for 30 seconds so you can pause this. Make sure you've got something to write with. And we're going to move forward here in just seconds.
Listen to Coaching the Life Coach, Business and Marketing Strategies for Growth of Transformational Practices with Jason McClain, your guide in the 21st century marketplace on personallifemedia.com.
Okay, welcome back. Welcome back with your pen and paper. And sleight of mouth. It's really like sleight of hand, And remember, it's your duty to offer somebody an expanded sense of the world. That's what you're doing. You're offering vision and possibility. And you have to leverage them beyond their limitations. 16 sleight of mouth patterns. I will name the pattern, and I will give you an example of it. These are most effective with a cause and effect sentence structure or complex equivalency. So what that means is, well, I can't do this because blank, cause effect. Or, well, you know, this means this. That would be complex equivalency. You know, X, you know, means Y. Complex equivalency. So let's get into these. First one's called apply to self. So Mrs. says, well, you know, I can't afford to do this. And you say, well, that's exactly why you need to go. Or that's exactly why you need to do it. Or you can't afford not to do it. These are all examples of apply to self. The next one is called change frame size. They say, you know, I can't afford it, or it costs too much. You say, where are you going to be several years from now if you don't make a choice to change your current situation? Change frame size. So in other words, you're expanding the scope of what they're looking at. They're not just looking at the contract or the price. You're actually saying, well, you know, in 5 years, if you haven't done this, how are things going to be? And then it expands the scope of what they're looking at. Somebody says, well, I can't afford to do this. It costs too much, something like that. Next one's called meta frame. A lot of people think that. A lot of people have a belief in a limited world. The truth is there's plenty of money out there. You just have to find it. Now, what meta frame there means is essentially you're going to the underlying belief. Well, I can't afford this. You could say something like, well, you know, a lot of people think that they should allocate their resources to survival. And really what I'm looking for is to help you thrive. That's kind of a combination of meta frame and then changing frame size, because you're going from survival to thrival, which is changing frame size. But meta frame, you're going, you know, a lot of people, you know, believe in survival rather than thrival. In other words, they're just trying to get by, and where you're actually trying to assist them in thriving. Next one's called reality strategy. You know, I can't go or I can't do it because it costs too much. How would you know if it was more than worth it to you? And then what will happen is they'll give you, with enough rapport, I can't stress rapport enough, they'll give you their criteria for fulfillment. You might have to go away and retool your offering, but that's one of my favorites. Next one's called model of the world. I say, well, you know, we can't do this because it costs too much, or we can't move forward. I say it's the people who decide to make the choice to invest in themselves who lead the kind of life they deserve. Model of the world essentially means how you move through the world, or how you're viewing it, or how you approach the world. Or one of my favorite authors, Ayn Rand, if you haven't read Atlas Shrugged, please do. Talk about a heroic view of human being. It's amazing. And she had something called a sense of life, is the way she described how people move through the world. Their model of the world is very similar. Next is hierarchy of values. They say, you know, we can't do this because it costs too much. You say, isn't it more important to enrich your life than save a few dollars now? Isn't it more important? And we've talked about listing values. And so there's also a hierarchy of values. So someone says, you know, gee, you know, I really can't do this. You say, well, isn't it more important that you do X? Then, yeah, you know, you save a few dollars now. Next is consequence. And this is one of my least favorites, but some people are definitely leveraged more by pain. And if you just look at some of the most effective commercials or marketing campaigns, they're usually based on fear. I have made it a habit to avoid that, because I just have a philosophical resistance to leveraging people's pain. And sometimes it's effective, so you can take that on if you like. So I provide this one to you. Consequence. Somebody says, you know, we can't afford to do this. You say, well, what will it cost you if you don't change the way you're doing this now? What's it going to cost you? Or what's it going to cost you if you don't invest this right now? And you want to make sure with this one you've got a lot of rapport, and you're really certain, like 98% certain, that your service or product is going to provide the solution, and that you're really going to be well equipped to partner with them. Because that one is pretty heavy handed. The more rapport, the more effective that will be. Becomes even more important that you are giving 110%. Okay, last one for this episode. Changing outcome frame. You know, we can't do this because we can't afford it. You say that. That kind of thinking works if you want to save money. But if you really want to live up to your full potential in your department or with your relationship or whatever the context is, You need to take a stand at some point and decide you're worth it, you're worth investing in, or your team is worth investing in, or what have you. Changing outcome frame. That's the first eight of them. We'll go over the second half, the other eight of these linguistic patterns in the next episode. To review really quickly, so that you can have this in the background of your mind, embedded in your neurology. You're doing your personal work. You're setting your intention towards positive outcomes. You're building rapport. You're developing incredible skills of information gathering, doing gap analysis, conducting gap analysis, and being an inquiry around values in every context. And you're continually gathering permission to deliver your offering each step of the way. You're embedding units of meaning and value, as well as units of conviction, in the client's experience in your relationship with them. You're building vision and possibility because you've realized that they are buying a vision or possibility. They're buying a result, a solution. They're not buying a product or service. You're beginning to reframe concerns. And we've delivered the first eight of those. We'll deliver the second half of that whole system of sleight of mouth in the next episode. Before I sign off, I've got a listener question. Colin from Scotland emails me. He says, I've been listening to your podcast, Revolutionary Sales, and I'm learning a lot. I'm glad to hear that, Colin. Thank you. And to get to the meat of his questions, he says, you advocate telling your prospect this is a sales call. Do you have time for a sales call? If the person says they don't have time and that, quote, no time would be good for a sales call, end quote, how do you propose I respond? Well, I've actually never had that response. I don't think in thousands of phone calls I've never had somebody say, no time would be good for a sales call. It could be that you're not talking to the right person, that they're not actually the decision makers. The first thing I'll say, they're not the person you should be speaking with. And so they say, well, no, you know, what I suggest is you say, do you have time for a sales call? They say, no. You say, when would you have time? Now, they will usually get out your calendar. I have had people do this. I have had people schedule one and then tell me that that's not good either, and schedule another one and tell me that's not good either, and do what I consider, I really think that they're probably stringing me along, or, you know, who knows at that point. But after three, I just decide that there is no good time for a sales call for them, or that they're really not being straight with me. But if they say no time would be good for a sales call, I would say, oh, great. Well, who would have time for a sales call? Here's what I'm offering. Do you know who I should speak to in the company? Or do you know anyone who might be interested in blank? And you have your elevator pitch there, which should be a one or two sentence description that should grab interest right away. Be intriguing, not necessarily fully descriptive, but intriguing and grab interest. You could say something like, well, do you know somebody who is interested in expanding their blank, and it's something to do with results? Do you know someone who is interested in increasing their sales? If you're calling a sales manager and you're trying to sell a sales product, one of my favorites is, you know, they say, well, no time's good for a sales call. Oh, good, great. Do you know another manager who is interested in increasing their department results? Now, you have to say that really diplomatically with your tone, because they can take offense to that because you're suggesting they don't. And I have had a couple people get upset on the phone, to be sure, when I do things like that. But I've had a lot more people respond effectively to it. And again, even if they get upset, I look at that and I go, oh, wow, they got upset. What can I learn here? What can I do differently? You may never talk to them again. You may never see them again. But the learning on every phone call is critical. So I would simply outframe it. You know, I'm not sure we've talked about framing or not. I don't actually recall, but outframing is kind of like, well, who else? You kind of expand the scope, just like in the expanding the frame size. It's like outframing. You know someone who would be interested in a sales call about increasing their results, or about it, you know, something like that. The bottom line is also, forget about scripts. Learn the patterns or the meta structure of what you're actually up to in the communication, so that you can begin to experiment and play with it. And remember, you know, after you make a few thousand phone calls, you kind of stop caring how people respond when it's negative. You just start to laugh at it, and you just go, wow, this is really interesting. and you just start to focus on the learning, after you get, you know, the couple thousand, the first couple thousand out of your system, you really kind of, you know, flush out your sinuses, so to speak, then you begin to have a lot more fun. Because, you know, you don't care. It's just a numbers game at that point. You're tracking your numbers. You're having fun. You're noticing what you can learn. And that's when you're really emerging on becoming a sales professional rather than a sales person. So, again, I'm Jason McClain, your host, your guide in the 21st century marketplace. Thanks for joining me in this episode of Evolutionary Sales. Join me next week to talk about the other half of Sleight of Mouth. You can reach me at jason@personallifemedia.com. That's personallifemedia.com with two L's. And for transcripts of this show or other shows in the Personal Life Media Network, please visit personallifemedia.com. Again, two L's on personallifemedia.com. Have a great week. And remember, the best way to predict your future is to create it.
Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com.